still in a war, but you plan for a peace, you have to create an economy and you have to create an industry to support, you know, that feeds into that economy. So I came up with this idea, right? I knew they had a couple of real natural resources. They have opium, which I had no use for because it was leading to overdose deaths around the globe. They have really rare minerals, which are 15 years underground, and China bought the rights to all of them, so we didn't really have access.
Hey guys, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining. I'm excited about the opportunity to build a relationship and connect this supply chain. I mean, after all, that's why we started the association. Our association was built on the foundation of connecting supply chain, building relationships, and helping you grow your business. Anyone from farmers, manufacturers, and distributors, people that are passionate about the supply chain, and those creating products selling into biofuels, plastics, textiles, construction, and building materials.
Hello, we're live. Todd, did I catch you dancing back there to that jam?
Probably a little bit.
I love that last one, the last commercial where it gives thanks to everybody in 2022, because it's just a reminder of how many people we've met and all of the great things and conversations that we've heard and great things that we've seen done. So just want to give thanks also to everybody else that's listening. I saw just now that it looks like our Facebook link isn't hooked up. So I hope that we get enough or everybody else that's linking in through YouTube and LinkedIn. Please let us know where you're chiming in from. We would love to see you, love to answer questions today. Todd's got tons of background, and I'm really excited about this connection and to help support the growth of the industry and what everybody else is doing. So Todd, before I ramble on too much, I want to pass it over to you and tell me a little bit about who you are, introduce yourself, and really before you got into hemp and cannabis industry, what's your background?
Yeah, so I thanks, Mandy, and I really appreciate the platform. I love the Global Hemp Association, the whole concept, because this is really a plant that is impacting our entire planet and our species. So my background's a little bit different. I'm kind of an unexpected cannabis guy because I spent 27 years of my life serving in the United States Army. I retired as a lieutenant colonel in 2018. During my career, first I was an enlisted man, and I was a linguist initially, a Czech and Slovak linguist. This was still during the Cold War, so I was learning all of the languages of Central and Eastern Europe. And then I was accepted to West Point, which is the United States Military Academy, which puts out about 7% of our officers every year. It's a university that has borne leaders such as Eisenhower and Grant and Pershing and Patton, McMaster, yes. Reyes, and the like, you know, and it was also an institution that was founded by a hemp farmer. A lot of people don't know that, but West Point was the founder of West Point. It was Thomas Jefferson, who was at the time, you know, one of the largest hemp producers in the United States. So I graduated from West Point in 1996. I became an armor officer. So on tanks and Bradley fighting vehicles, I served in Fort Riley, Kansas, and in Germany. And then I became a foreign area officer, which is a special type of officer that the Army trains to focus on particular regions of the world and give strategic advice to our ambassadors and our general officers and military staffs. I was lucky enough to get Europe. So I served in 6 different countries in Europe. And learned 5 different languages.
Wow.
I lived in Germany for 3.5 years, Czech Republic for a year, Belgium for 2 years as the exchange officer to the Belgian Army. I deployed with them to Afghanistan the first time. I served as the Army attaché to Bosnia and Herzegovina for 2 years, the Training and Doctrine Command liaison officer to the French Army for 2 years. And then I served as the defense attaché, senior defense official and defense attaché to Slovenia for 3.5 glorious years in this beautiful country. And then finally, I finished up my career as an instructor in the Department of Joint, Multinational, and Interagency Operations at the Command and General Staff College in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, which is right in the center of the country. It was just a huge privilege to to be able to educate and train mid-level military officers on the creation of U.S. foreign and defense policy and strategy, and teach them how it's developed and how it's implemented abroad, to, you know, hopefully to increase peace and security around the globe. So I spent a lot of my military career trying to prevent what's happening right now in Ukraine. I spent my entire adult life up until I left the military trying to maintain peace and security in a region that I care deeply about, and left and entered in the cannabis industry.
Yeah. Okay. So why? This is going to be my question. Out of all of your background and experience, why hemp and cannabis? And when did you learn about Thomas Jefferson being a hemp farmer and then being the founder at West Point? You know, when did that click for you?
Well, I mean, I've kind of studied Thomas Jefferson as the founder of West Point. You know, going to West Point, I learned about, I was really kind of a gray hog, which means someone who's really into West Point, into the academy. Because I feel like it was some administrative error how I somehow got in. I'm not sure. But I was so grateful to be admitted to such an incredible institution. And, you know, I really like look more into his hemp background, Thomas Jefferson's hemp background. Once I left the military and started coming into the industry, and I started looking at all of the West Point graduates or people involved in that academy who had dealings with hemp. You know, I have a book by an 1873 graduate, a Medal of Honor recipient named Major General William H. Carter. He wrote a book called Horses, Saddles, and Bridles in 1895. Oh, wow. This is a guy who had, you know, explored the Western Plains beyond Fort Leavenworth, beyond the center of the country, and learned all of these lessons about how to fight and win wars in the cavalry. And he gives this list in this book, 1895, gives this list of all of the equipment that you bring, the training that you do, and all of the medicines that you bring. And one guess what the first medicine was?
Upper cannabis.
Cannabis indica. Cannabis indica flowers. And it even talks about how you make the preparation, and you would provide it for the horses. He even highlights the superiority of this medicine to the opium medicine, which was the other alternative. So it's really unique.
Wow.
Military history is just filled with intersections with hemp and with cannabis. You know, I mean, all the way back to 400 BC, the female Scythian warriors, the Amazonians, right, who were fierce warriors in 400 BC, there is archaeological evidence that showed that they would hotbox caves or tents before they would go into battle. And they would use cannabis as a recovery process as well. So really fascinating connectivity there. But, you know, I was inspired to come into this industry while serving in Afghanistan. I learned about cannabis while serving my second tour in Afghanistan, where I was serving as a special advisor to the commander of the entire coalition, right? So the Eisenhower, if you will, of Afghanistan, a guy named General John Allen, a 4-star U.S. Marine, asked me to be on his staff to help manage the relationship with this large multinational coalition, 50 nations, the largest coalition that's ever existed. And in doing that, he asked our small staff to figure out, like, really out of the box ways of addressing, creating an industry for Afghanistan after the war, right? We were already thinking, like, what is the post-war industry? How do you develop a country that's still in a war, but you plan for a peace? You have to create an economy, and you have to create an industry to support, you know, that feeds into that economy. So I came up with this idea, right? I knew they had a couple of real natural resources. They have opium, which I had no use for, because it was leading to overdose deaths around the globe. They have really rare minerals, which are 15 years underground, and China bought the rights to all of them. So we didn't really have access to that, right? They're rare minerals. They go in our cell phones. right? And China bought the rights to all of them. Then they had cannabis, tons and tons of cannabis that they were growing for hashish, right? The Taliban would grow hashish, send it off into the prohibition markets, mostly into Europe. And then the profits from that were coming back in the forms of IEDs and weapons and funding Taliban operations, which were leading to the deaths of our soldiers. So I thought we'd flip the script just a little bit, right? I said, why don't we transition them to a hemp industry, right? With 25,000 different uses. We have 8,000 years of human history with this plant. We've essentially evolved with the plant. It's a source of food, fuel, fiber, building material, medicine, all of this stuff. And the bonus would be if you grow cannabis for industrial purposes near cannabis that's grown for high THC, hashish, they'll cross-pollinate, the product would weaken, they'd get less profits in the prohibition market, and everybody'd be happy. Well, I thought it was great. They thought it was kind of Cheech and Chong. But I was hooked. I was just hooked on this subject. First and foremost, I saw very quickly that there were military applications to hemp and to cannabis, right? Everything from, perhaps mitigating and treating traumatic brain injury, which was killing tons and tons of our soldiers, many of whom worked for me. There were different material that could be made. I learned about the ability to make, anything we can make out of plastic, we can make out of hemp. Yes. Again, source of food, fuel, fiber, building material, and medicine. So it seemed to be kind of the ideal plant. And again, I was laughed at because they just weren't there yet. The conversation about hemp and cannabis on a global scale just wasn't there yet. But I was hooked. I was really hooked too by the social justice aspect of the whole thing, right? I grew up in a Mexican household in California. My stepfather's Mexican. I grew up in a Mexican community. When I learned about the prohibition of cannabis being, as a result of racism that was directed specifically at the Mexican population, I was really angered and upset. Mm-hmm. When I looked further and saw how the prohibition of cannabis in general had been used as a tool of oppression for poor people, not just in the United States, but around the world, I was really upset about that because, as a guy who's fighting for freedom, it didn't seem to reflect the country that I was fighting for. And so I knew there was something, there was an opportunity here. There was something that I wanted to do and I wanted to be a part of it. And in 2018, I retired after 27 years in the Army to join in this industry and to join in the fight and to bring my voice into the conversation, because I believe that, the veteran voice is a very powerful voice. And I feel like I represent not all veterans, but I represent a huge aspect of the military community and the veteran community who want this, who could benefit this, because this is a community that is in crisis, right? A massive healthcare crisis, 22 veterans a day committing suicide, 10 more overdosing on opioids or other medications. We're drinking ourselves to death. And we have to choose, by the way, between this particular substance, between cannabis as a medicine and very dangerous opioids and other methods of treatment, but also we often have to choose between housing. If you're poor and you live in maybe federally funded government housing, you can't use cannabis. We have to choose between access to this plant and a job. Right. Especially a job working for the U.S. federal government. Right? And I can't. So it's a real readiness issue in terms of our own American workforce, the government workforce, the military workforce and others. And I think that, I just wanted to be a part of the conversation and draw from the experience that I received serving my country and being a military diplomat in numerous countries. I wanted to bring that all together around this plant to show, what it can do.
Okay, so I, as you're talking, I have so many things. First, I want to say thank you so much for your service. Thank you for all your hard work in the industry and everything you've done prior to entering into the industry, and welcome. Like, I'm so thankful to have a veteran voice and thankful to have somebody with a background and the respect that's not, no discredit to our industry, but I think it really validates what we're trying to do. The more out of industry we're able to bring in, and the more people we're able to say, you know, that have stable careers and have done a lot for our country, to be able to say, listen, guys, we need to pay attention. We've got something important here and something valuable. We just need to kind of change the way it's been looked at, right?
Yeah.
And then before I dive in, I'm really curious, as you brought up, you know, rebuilding Ukraine and some of the, you know, post-war, you know, rebuild. But before we dive into that, you said some things that kind of trigger me is, you know, the blue collar industry, you know, and the unions and workforce services. What do you anticipate as far as timeline for, especially in those states where medical programs are allowed, for cannabis to be used, or how is it going to be regulated or controlled within those entities that are all drug testing randomly? Or, you know, yeah, I'm kind of curious because I feel like this is a fine line and a balance that I don't really dive into very much, but right now it's kind of personally hitting some friends of mine.
Yeah, because I want to bring it back to hemp, which as you can tell was my first love, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
But then I really fell deeper once I experienced cannabis as medicine and have seen, you know, the thousands of lives that it's positively impacted. I think that employers, will come to their senses eventually and recognize that, cannabis, one, you know, is a very safe and effective medicine, and can help people move away from really dangerous and, you know, destructive products like pharmaceuticals and alcohol, right? It's a big culture shift. I mean, this whole thing, yeah. Mandy, is a massive paradigm shift, yes. That has impacts on so many levels, right? I mean, who would have thought that the prohibition of a single plant, just one single plant, could have so many implications, right? Those are on the levels of social justice, mm-hmm. and equality and fairness and, you know,
access to income, housing, so, careers.
So, yes. Yeah, there's economics, you know, from the, yes. individual all the way to the international level. There are sustainability questions that still remain, and there are opportunities to utilize the sustainability advances that we've made in the cultivation of cannabis to transition the way we feed our planet, and the byproducts of hemp and cannabis can be used to rebuild our planet, you know, rebuild our buildings in places like Ukraine and Turkey and Syria, for example, if you think about it that way. But I think the big piece is just in general the health and wellness opportunity to improve that for our species and our planet and other species, by the way. You know, hemp as a, yes. animal feed and bedding, we're seeing just incredible results from that.
I'm, you know, speaking of this and some tidbits of information that I've collected recently is just learning on some studies about the increased weight gain in feedlots and the decrease of consumption. And the impact that makes economically over the big scheme of things is just mind blowing to me. Yeah. Again, here we have this tool that has been healthy and is considered safe for us to consume. And yet we've got these unrealistic roadblocks that are just, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. So, yeah. And, you know, part of my background intersects there too. You know, my grandfather was a California cotton farmer, right? So a very incredibly water intensive crop being grown in the San Joaquin Valley, where, you know, we have essentially systematically drained our aquifers in California. And, yeah. and beyond that, my dad is a cattle rancher in California. So I grew up in feedlots and gathering cattle, yeah. and watching, you know, my dad, whenever cowboys pass each other on the road out in there, they always stop. And the first question they ask is, how much range you get up at your place? right? And it's, you know, eighth of an inch, half an inch, quarter inch, something like that. But it's all about water and resources and consumption rates, right?
So, they're at the mercy of Mother Nature, you know, crazy. and then again at the buyer's grace of paying a fair price. Like, our farmers are just need to be taken care of.
Absolutely. Our farmers do, but our farmers also have to be flexible as well, I think. You can begin to evolve the way we feed our planet using some of the sustainability lessons that we've learned in the cultivation of cannabis writ large. I mean, the answer is probably stop eating animals. I know that, but they taste so good and it's just kind of hard. Not to mention there's entire industries that are associated with the animal industry, but it's a very polluting one, but we can make it less polluting by using feeds like hemp feed and things of that nature.
Yeah. Okay. So back to rebuilding, you know, post-war, talk to me about how hemp is really playing a role. Where do you see it really impacting? Yeah.
So this concept of post-conflict reconstruction, I just want to share with people, this is the time frame after a war takes place and you have to rebuild a country that's been destroyed by, you know, the most polluting activity that man can do, which is, you know, throw bombs at one another and shoot people. If you think of the context right now, you know, Ukraine's really fertile lands are being poisoned and polluted with rockets and bombs and fuel and blood and things of that nature, ruining much of their land. So you have to kind of rebuild in a place like that. You're also having all of the buildings are being leveled. I have experience in post-conflict reconstruction because I've lived in post-conflict zones. I served in Bosnia for 2 years, and I was part of the post-conflict reconstruction efforts that were being executed both by international organizations like NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the European Union, the United Nations, and many others. And so I got to see how those international organizations operate together to rebuild a country. Additionally, you know, growing up in the military now, I did a lot of research, especially in Europe, about how you do post-conflict reconstruction. And so I look back very closely to things like the Marshall Plan, which took place in 1947, just a couple of years after the end of the Second World War, where the United States gave $13 billion to 16 European countries, right? This was hotly contested, by the way. But if you can imagine, the entire agricultural infrastructure and economic infrastructure of Europe had been destroyed by, you know, a devastating 4.5-year-long war. We gave money to Germany, former Nazi Germany, and former fascist Italy, right? Our former enemies. We also gave it to our allies, France, United Kingdom, and like I said, 16 other countries across Europe. And it was hugely successful. It's largely seen as one of the most successful development stories in world history, not just American history, but world history. And the idea was that in order to bring economic recovery to a country, you had to rebuild their agricultural infrastructure. So I've taken a page from General George C. Marshall, who was then the Secretary of State. And I kind of combined that with another World War II program called the Hemp for Victory program, which I'm sure your listeners are very familiar with. But in 1942 and 1943, after we lost access to hemp throughout the Pacific in the Philippines, we realized that we couldn't win the war unless we were able to provide the fiber and cordage for ropes and tents and webbing and things of that nature. So we created the Hemp for Victory program to reteach American farmers how to grow hemp.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea is, you know, in this period where we are right now, right? We are not in a post-conflict reconstruction phase in Ukraine. We are in the middle of a very hot war. And when I say we, I mean the world, because the world is experiencing this. But
yeah, it impacts. That ripple effect is real when we talk about like baby formula and bread and our prices of things, oil and gas. Yeah,
absolutely. Yes. But you know, I mean, that the war in Ukraine is just taking place in the middle of another war that we've already been in, right? And this is the fight for our lives. And I'm talking about climate change, right? So on a global level, our species is struggling to survive. We have over 20 million climate refugees, right? And that is going to do nothing but increase. And we see how weather continues to fluctuate very violently and very wildly. So we're going to see a continuation of that. And if we don't address that, then, you know, our children's future is going to suffer. Our future is going to suffer because it's happening in real time where people are suffering forest fires and floods and
tsunamis. And very short timeframes. Like I've heard over 50 to 60 growing seasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's our lifetime. That's not our children's, you know, once we're gone, it is impacting us. And it's scary.
So we're in a fight for our lives.
Yeah.
And in my view, one of the ways that we can, you know, contribute to or address climate change is through the way we conduct U.S. foreign policy and development, right? So bring together the not just the U.S. interagency, because when I give this presentation at EarthX in April, I'm not just talking to the U.S. government or the American interagency. I'm really hoping that it falls on the ears of world leaders, right? Of major powers who consider how we can address climate change through the reconstruction and development process by betting heavily on hemp, by focusing on hemp. In the context of Ukraine, for example, you know, I think that, you know, instead of sending tanks, we should send flowers. By flowers, I mean the cannabis plant in general, right? Give them the gift of hemp and cannabis, food, fuel, fiber, building material, and medicine are all resident within this one plant. And the trick of it is that you have to be able to process it, to cultivate it and process it, right? So when we're looking at a Ukraine whose agricultural infrastructure is being systematically destroyed, whose soils are being heavily polluted, we can use hemp both in the cultivation process to remediate soil the same way they've been doing in Ukraine now around Chernobyl, right? Mm-hmm. And around the country with the other 1,500 hectares of hemp that they're growing, but we can remediate the soil, right? And then if we develop a really strong, technologically advanced processing infrastructure around Ukraine, then we can benefit from the plant. Ukraine can benefit from the plant in all of its aspects, right? Pulling the grain for really high protein food, right? In Ukraine, they're already making hemp meatballs, which are very high in protein packed, to show just some of the diversification and the diversification and the originality in their activities already. We could, and obviously be using the byproduct of the fiber for everything from insulation to, you know, an export that they'll be able to ship out, all the way down to the herd for the creation of hempcrete, right? So hempcrete, as you and all of your listeners know, is a carbon negative building material. Most recently, October of 22, it's been approved for residential usage in the United States. And, you know, this is a product where we take the inner core or the shiv of the hemp plant, chip it up into 2 millimeter bits, mix it with lime and water and form it into bricks, or obviously, we can pour it in place, right? So there's all kinds of new building techniques that are going into place. But to encourage rebuilding using hempcrete and hemp wood and things of that nature is something that I'm highly recommending because of the carbon sequestration value, both in the cultivation process of that plant, as well as in the building portion of that plant. What we know now is that when you're building with concrete, for example, 1 cubic meter requires the output of 270 kilograms of CO2, whereas a cubic meter of hempcrete will suck in 78 kilograms of CO2, right? So making it incredibly carbon negative, resulting in buildings that are healthier, require less heating and cooling during the winter or the summer months, and is mold, mildew, pest, and fire resistant, right? So this is all, I think, good stuff that we should be promoting, and it could be the real basis of future industry.
Yes.
You know, and if I may add, you know, a key element to any industry, especially a developing industry, is your workforce development plan, right? So this is where my thoughts here, my plan, I believe, are unique, because this is something where we could focus on the workforce of Ukraine, even those who are displaced outside of their borders, right? So this is a nation that has been spread out across the world. And if we could take this opportunity to educate and train Ukrainians who are in places like Poland, where they're growing a ton of hemp, or France, or Germany, or the United States, or Canada, where hemp is being grown and manufactured into really amazing and unique products like car door panels for Germany, right? BMW, Audi, and Mercedes-Benz all put hemp into their car doors, or hempcrete, hemp bricks, hemp shingles. There's pretty much no limit to what we can do. I think our imagination.
Can I look at?
Limit.
I look at the food, right? We go back to the people and who we're servicing and the impact, you know, and this hierarchy of needs and the ability to feed their cattle. You know, when I travel to some of these countries, it just is mind blowing to me, the difference in the way that their cattle look, you know, and it's purely because of lack of nutrients and being able to support. And so, yeah. Or as you were talking about the grain side, also the fuel, biofuel and energy sector that becomes really impactful. And so, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, as we know, like it's in order for someone to survive, you address Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. So food, shelter and clothing. And it's so ironic and unique, I think, with this one particular plant that you can hit all three of those. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, you know, food from the seed, the textiles for clothing, and then hempcrete.
Okay.
So obviously beyond that, you have the biofuel and medicine aspect, right? So this is where the conversation of hemp and cannabis as medicine comes up, because, you know, we're talking about a nation, as I said, that is displaced, but we're talking about a nation that will suffer post-traumatic stress for generations to come. And I think really understanding how hemp and cannabis can address health and wellness is something that we should be sharing with them as an opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Right. And I think that, you know, this goes back, and I talk about this all the time with people when I, you know, kind of explain where these two industries, cannabis being one and hemp being another, really are the same in that, you know, nutrition is medicine, and making sure we're, like you said, meeting it at the ground level and being able to build up. And so it's pretty exciting for me. So as far as military and their knowledge, where are they as far as understanding the industry and understanding the opportunities and really what's needed from the industry or from the nation? You know, what do we need from them to really help bridge this gap or build the infrastructure that we need, similar to what they did prior to the last, you know, World War II, right, in the 40s.
That's a really good question. And it's part of what I'm trying to do here and at Dex and in any opportunity that I have to address folks. You know, we created a foundation called the Hemp for Victory Foundation. A gentleman named Robert Head and myself, he's a young infantryman out of Dallas, Texas, and we created the Hemp for Victory Foundation. The purpose of it is to really host the conversation about cannabis and the military, right? Not just veterans, but cannabis and the military, and have these conversations as often as possible and wherever possible, right? The idea is to bring together hemp and cannabis expertise with military and veteran leadership whenever and wherever possible, because what needs to happen, what the gap is, or how you fill that gap, is through education, right? My hope is that with my presentation at EarthX in April and any engagement that I have with military leadership, my hope is to educate them and inform them and spark and capture their imagination by drawing out what this opportunity is. That's what I'm looking for. All I'm looking for is a recognition from people in leadership positions that hemp and cannabis are probably one of the most incredible opportunities of our time. There are military applications, there are civilian applications. It cuts across racial lines, economic lines, international lines. And it's a conversation that everyone's having within their own borders, but we're not having it with one another, because very often we look at this as the problem of weed instead of the opportunity of cannabis.
Yes. Right? Yes.
This plant, if we think about it, is a common thread that runs between all of us, all of our history somehow.
Yes.
Right. This plant, which, you know, we believe originated in what is today China.
Yes.
And their ability, people's ability to take this plant with them and throw seeds in the ground wherever they landed, and they could have food, clothing, shelter, and yep. things of that nature, is, you know, it's pretty representative of how useful this plant is and how important it is to us and how ridiculous it was that we ever prohibited it, right? So, but all is not lost. Right now, after 87 years of prohibition, mm-hmm. where we've been unable to really do any research or apply any real brain power to this, we're coming to this time where we can now apply the world's most advanced technologies to the world's most complex and therapeutically active plant. And I think that we can do it for real good, for real purpose, real intention, with one particular subject in mind right now, and that's helping the people of Ukraine and rebuilding Ukraine, building the Ukraine of the future and building the planet of the future. And while we're doing it, you know, hopefully pulling us back away from the edge of this climate crisis, right? Starting to build more sustainably with an economic system that feeds into it. So
I've said for a long time, and you kind of touched on this, right, is it's kind of funny, like technology touches every facet of our life. So does hemp. So does cannabis, right? It is in from the roads and the streets we walk on or drive on, to the medicine, to the hair products, to carpet, to everything it can be in. And it's super, super exciting. What do some of your other West Point graduates think about your endeavors?
Well, I mean, it's funny, you know, I've run the gamut. I think I've lost some friends.
Sure.
And that's okay, right? I was so committed to this subject. I think I can regain those friends in the future, but I'm so committed to this subject. I was really, you know, I mean, I left the military early. You know, I could have served longer than 27 years. Today, I could very well have been, you know, the defense attaché to France or potentially yes. Ukraine. Because of my language skills. But I left because I saw that there are military applications. There's the potential here to mitigate and treat traumatic brain injury and increase the survivability of soldiers in combat, reduce the instance of post-traumatic stress. There's the potential to address, true chronic pain issues in a number of different ways using cannabis products. And, but the West Point graduates, one, I always remind them now that our founder was a hemp cultivator, right? I mean, Thomas Jefferson, the founder of West Point, was one of the largest hemp growers in the country. And today at Monticello, they are growing hemp once again, the same way they are on George Washington's farm, right?
Awesome.
The same way they are on General Patton's farm. By the way, actually, they're growing full adult use cannabis on General Patton's farm in Massachusetts, by the way.
Yes. See, that's bringing back history. History repeats itself.
Exactly. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's also interesting that both the Pentagon and Arlington National Cemetery are on former hemp fields, both of them. You know, until the building of the Pentagon during World War II, it was just a bunch of hemp fields. It's kind of interesting.
That's so cool. So cool. So looking forward, you know, and you've said a lot of things that hemp, you know, why hemp is valuable or important to you, but what really excites you moving forward about it? You know, what opportunities do you really see both near and in the near future, you know, maybe near future and mm-hmm. coming up in the next few years, that if somebody's looking to get into the industry or into the industry and really trying to refocus to move the needle forward, yeah, where should we be looking and what excites you?
Wow. Well, the future is wide open.
Yes.
You know, as I said, this is one of the fastest growing industries in the country, if not the world. And, you know, you can do everything within it from being a cultivator, manufacturer, processor, delivery person, security person, dispensary operator. You can own businesses within this. So in terms of employment opportunities, there are a ton that are available out there, as well as the ancillary side of the industry, which, by the way, is really all my company does, is ancillary cannabis industry stuff.
And, you know, they say in the gold rush, it's the guys that sold the shovels and picks that did
it. Yeah, exactly.
Listen up, folks.
But really, for me, what excites me is the opportunity. And I think the potential for the VA, the U.S. Veterans Administration, to be a real hero here. The Veterans Administration, in my view, is the ideal platform upon which to overlay research and begin really deep research in terms of cannabis as medicine, right? The Veterans Administration is responsible for the largest patient population in the United States, with 9 million veterans getting their care from the VA. Also at the VA, they have 150 VA hospitals across the country and in the territories. We have 1,200 VA clinics across the country that cover rural communities and things of that nature. Each of these VA hospitals, by the way, have research relationships with local universities. And I think that's a real key, by the way, is getting academia deeply involved in this research. I'm very excited. Yale University just opened their cannabis research center in the state where I'm located in Missouri. St. Louis University does a cannabis science and operations program. Kansas State University has 5 hemp plots that they're growing. Even in a prohibition state, people are looking at this plant as a major opportunity.
Yes.
But the VA, in my view, has the potential to do, you know, the largest human trial on cannabis that's ever been conducted. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when veterans go in, they don't know that they're okay to use cannabis. They can tell their VA doctors that they can use cannabis. And I do every single time I see one. But they just go, okay, cannabis, anything else? And they don't even write anything down. And I always ask them, aren't you curious?
Yeah.
And know why I'm telling you that this plant is really saving my life and is just a huge blessing in my life. And they're like, no, not really. I'm like, you should be curious. You should ask me how much I use, how often I use it, how much does it cost? What are my methods of administration?
What else are you using it in substitute of? Right?
Exactly.
What are you able to get off of because you're able to use this? Or how often are you drinking less because of?
Correct. How's it impacted your life? You know, things of this nature. Are you feeling better? So I think that's what I'm excited about. I'm excited because I believe that there is a huge opportunity here. I believe that it's a paradigm shift. I believe it is my duty to share with military leadership that this plant can address so many issues of our time. And we cannot be afraid to look it in the eye. We cannot be afraid to have the conversation. And so with the Hemp for Victory Foundation, my goal is to really host these conversations as often as possible and wherever possible. The reason is you know, we can't solve this over, you know, chicken wings at a at one single social event.
We've tried.
Exactly. You know, I can't convince someone in 15 minutes. Maybe right. I should be able to, but really, we should be interested in this so that we can follow as the policies change, so we can track as the science is more deeply understood. We should be asking countries like Canada, right? Our NATO ally. We should be asking them, hey, I heard that your VA is providing medical cannabis for your veterans. How's that working out for you?
Yes.
You know, or even better, you know, their active duty personnel can use cannabis when not on duty. How's that working out for you? And I think the answer is pretty good. You know, from all reports, the sky has not fallen in Canada. And we're about to find out the same thing in Germany, right? The fourth largest GDP on the planet. And then and a fellow NATO ally is legalizing cannabis for adult use. And they're going to have to deal with all of these things. So we, as the United States, should really be informing ourselves from their experiences, from our friends. We should not be afraid to talk about the subject. And we should really look at it as an incredible opportunity.
It really is the paradigm shift, right? Mm-hmm. And the time that it takes, this isn't just a quick fix. It's generations of being told how bad it's been for us, or how impossible usage is, or that there could be someone successful and an avid cannabis consumer, right? It's just a, Right. Yeah, this complete shift. Will anybody, how do people get in touch? If people want to get involved, Todd, or if they're in your area, and can you kind of talk a little bit about, you know, locally in your area, what kind of activism or how, you know, what does the market look like on the hemp side, specifically where you're at? Because I feel like it's just it's become a crossroads and a hub
for sure. Yeah, I think that. So to give everyone a sense of geography, I'm based in Kansas City, Missouri, actually Platte City, Missouri, which is just north of the new Kansas City International Airport. But if you looked at a map of the United States, essentially in the very geographic center, I look across the Missouri River from the Missouri side where I am, and I look at Kansas, right? So Kansas is, in terms of, if we're talking about cannabis legalization, Missouri is now an adult use state. We have 411 licensed operators already in the state from the medical cannabis program. And in less than 60 days, actually, we rolled out an adult use program and will issue another 144 licenses. So booming industry in Missouri. And then when you look across at Kansas, it is completely illegal, a complete prohibition state without any access to medical cannabis and certainly no adult use. And politicians there are scared to even discuss the subject for the most part. And they're not a voter initiative. They're a legislative initiative in Kansas. So the voters can't even change the laws there. So it's quite stark. But in terms of hemp, I should say that the Midwest is really moving along at a pretty rapid clip. I was recently at the Prairie Band Ag hemp processing facility in Holton, Kansas. And I see we have Theo Wakwakumbush, who's a good friend of ours, and also recently gave me a block of hempcrete, which I've now shown to at least 10 leaders in the Kansas and Missouri area. So it's really nice to have something to demonstrate with. But, you know, in Kansas, I mean, they're growing tons of hemp. Theo's processing it. There are other processors in the state as well, but it's moving along quite quickly. I think what's unique and probably interesting to your audience is that there appears to be a serious rift that's coming into view with, or coming into focus with, between the hemp and the cannabis community, especially in terms of impairing products like Delta 8, Delta 10, and all of the other molecules that are coming up, that are available in the hemp plant, but are being made through synthetic means. Obviously, you know, the people who are selling cannabis for the adult use or medical market are against the use of Delta 8 and Delta 10. So it's interesting to watch that rift come into place. But for me, I touch all sides. For me, it's all about the plant, and I work to give honor to the plant that I feel saved my life, and I see save others' lives all the time. In focusing on it in all of its uses, from industrial to medical, all the way to the adult use of cannabis. But yeah, Midwest is popping pretty heavily. It's interesting.
It's crazy. Well, and there's both Kansas and Missouri, right? Mm-hmm. There are a number of processors for industrial applications for fiber in both. And like I said, just ironically, yesterday, another group reached out to me focused on a carbon piece and the energy, you know, sector mm-hmm. kind of attached to this and to climate smart commodity, you know, agricultural practices, regenerative agriculture. And so, yeah, it's cool. And it's cool to see that, you know, go ahead. Yeah.
I want to, when in the mention of carbon, that's another piece of this idea is the ability to put forth carbon negative projects and attract foreign direct investment into these projects because of their carbon sequestration capacity. I think that's one area where this all intersects is perhaps the carbon markets in order to promote investment and drive this shift.
Well, and I think, okay, so that's one of my other questions now that we kind of brought this up is how much of that carbon conversation is involved when we're talking about the development or scale, right? I feel like it's almost like this subsidy that's looming or that additional piece that our farmers are going to need or our processors need or our manufacturers may need to really dive in because it's that long-term benefit versus the initial upfront.
Yeah, I think it's got to get normalized and the carbon markets have to get more mature. It's difficult to get a hemp project into the carbon markets from what I understand. And I haven't tried to do that, but I know that there's a way. There's a way to do it for sure. I think there's a way to do all of this. We're a very, wily bunch here in America. You know, we've put 6 American flags on the moon. So I think we can figure out hemp and cannabis. Right. For sure.
Well, and how much of it is still, you know, like the greed and capitalism, right? Where are we? And I have a question kind of forward thinking when we look at strategy to develop the industry, you know, who are going to be some of the big competitors that we're going to want to be concerned about or those that may not want to see the development of hemp for fiber or grain production or construction and building materials. What are your thoughts there as far as?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we find ourselves at the intersection of a lot of global powers here, right? But, and we shouldn't forget too, in terms of the great power competition, which I would refer to as, you know, United States, Russia, and China. Let's not forget that China is by far the largest producer of hemp and hemp-based materials, right? So there's a big power competition going on there. I think there will be obviously a lot of pushback. I think from industries like traditional construction industries, concrete and gravel and folks like that, they'd much rather you continue to use their products because the infrastructure is built for that. And, all of the formulations for putting a building together are just built for that. Whereas with hemp and hempcrete and hemp wood, we just don't, you know, people just aren't familiar with it. So the supply is very low, which means that the price for these types of products are very high. That's why I'm suggesting that we focus on the hemp processing aspect of it, the genetics to provide the proper type of hemp that can go into these processes for the purposes of, say, fiber or shiv, and then the processing capacity to do this at large scale, at volume, for such a purpose, and make it so that it is modular and can be shifted and changed, right? So this is a real revolution in agriculture, even though this is a plant that we've probably been growing longer than almost any other plant in the world.
Well, and that's what's so crazy, right? Is where'd the plans go from the last time we built this industry up? Like, where are those business models and where's the, yeah, they're somewhere.
Well, I think, so much has changed, so much technology. Yeah. I mean, for example, in Canada, they just built an airplane out of hemp and hemp composite. You know, they're building cars out of hemp and hemp composite and running them on hemp fuel. There's a motorcycle in New Zealand that I saw made out of hemp and running on hemp fuel or on batteries. Sorry, on batteries.
Yeah.
Which batteries, by the way, which can also be made from hemp.
Yeah. It just, it hits, like I said, every single sector. Well, very, very cool. I really appreciate having you on. However I can support you, I would love to, especially as you're out really speaking to people that, you know, can help move this forward and help bring projects together. And anything that we can do as a community, don't hesitate to reach out to Todd. LinkedIn, you said, is the best place to connect with you. He's very active on LinkedIn. And then Todd, are you going to be at NOCO, did you say?
No, I will not be at NOCO. I will be in, the group that, you know, I'm doing a lot of work right now with the Hemp for Victory Foundation.
Yes.
And people can find us at hemp4victory.info. And I would be so grateful for any, you know, folks that want to support our activities there. We are, again, the purpose is to host conversations with active duty military, with veterans. And we've done this successfully already. And the idea again is to give them the vocabulary to have the conversation and to envision what a hemp future can look like. Okay, so hemp4victory.info is where you'll find me for that. And then the next time we'll be doing something, the Hemp for Victory Foundation will be hosting a booth in Kansas City the week before 420 at the KC Canna Fest.
Okay.
And 30 by 30 grow booth there. We'll have a 5x5 grow tent set up. I'm giving away grow tents, 5 in Missouri to 5 Missouri veterans and 5 in Kansas to veterans. In Missouri, they'll be growing cannabis. And in Kansas, they'll be growing food. And so what I'm trying to demonstrate is, first, the therapeutic benefit of cultivating plants, and as well as the deployability of agriculture. And so this kind of goes, and it ties into the Hemp for Victory plan in Ukraine, in that, you know, we've made so many controlled environment ag advances to be able to deploy agriculture when Ukrainians go back to Zaporizhia and the infrastructure has been destroyed, sending people back with modular grow tents for personal use, as well as containerized grow units to support the food that would be consumed by those reconstructing, I think is a good thing for us to provide. And I think it could add to their future economy.
What's scale look like? I mean, obviously much smaller than the US, right? And so, you know, when we look at scalability, especially for hemp production and what that price point is, what do you anticipate over there? Smaller scale, localized grows?
Initially probably localized grows. Right now they're growing about 1500 hectares. I mean, I don't even think it makes up probably less than a 1% of 1% of their agricultural output currently. But the
lots of room for big scale production.
Yeah. The potential is enormous. Enormous that, you know, especially when you consider if we're growing hemp for fiber that won't be consumed, we could certainly be growing it in areas that have been heavily devastated by combat.
Yes.
And again, it's two part. We're remediating the soil, we're sinking carbon, then using the byproduct of that hemp to build homes that will be, incredibly healthy homes.
I love it. I love it. Love it. Well, I'd love to help support, you know, not just you, but anybody that you're working with. If you've got people that are in the industry or looking to get into the industry, love to help connect the supply chain, build those relationships and help move the project along. And then Todd, if there's anything else that comes up in the future that we want to talk about, I'd love to invite you back on, you as well as other people you may be working with, maybe Hemp for Victory, come on sometime and we talk specifically about some of the projects you guys are hammering out. And so thank you again very much. much for joining. For everybody else that's listening, thank you, Stephen and Buzz and Theo. It was great to see you. Great to see you on. John, as always, thank you so much. And Christopher, I don't know if you guys are still on or not. I saw that we still weren't connected to Facebook today, unfortunately. But for those of you that do listen on YouTube and LinkedIn, be sure to hit your little reminder, because we do go live Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at 10 a.m. Mountain Time. And there's a whole host of interviews that are being published and edited, shared on our podcast channels moving forward with Mandy Kerr, or on the YouTube channel Global Hemp Association. So thank you again, Todd. I sure appreciate you, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Mandy. Take care.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon. See you later, guys.